Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, electricity in the California desert for the unbelievable finish to the Bob Hope as we know it. It was fun time at PGA West. We got golf headlines and highlights from all around the world, a Tiger Woods update, plans for fans to return on the PGA Tour. A lot going on the tee. We get to that. Plus what we're tuned into outside of sports includes a couple of movie and show reviews of our own. And this week's guest is Nick Kumpis, innovative young instructor that has created a putting tool that we could all use. And he's got some great tips for golf parents who've got little ones getting into the game as well. We finish with Super Bowl matchup hoopla. I go nuts for a moment on Tom Brady. And the end of our January darts, we will find out in a moment. All of it is brought to you by our friends at FlightScope, though. I brought the Mevo out last weekend when I played, Mike. It's very easy to take a pocket-sized unit that's less than the size of your wallet out to the range, and it gives you all the data you need. This is the FlightScope Mevo. It is so compatible. It is so portable. It's so easy to use and connect to my phone. When I get practicing, I know exactly what my yardages are, no matter what the temperature is, the wind, any conditions, it gets me dialed in. It's the FlightScope Mevo, and our promo code is COL10 for 10% off of your own Mevo unit. Get one for yourself. Bubba Watson uses it. Bryson uses it. I love it in the backyard or on the range, and now you can too. It's the Mevo from FlightScope Golf, and our promo code is COL10 for 10% off your Mevo today.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Groove It Golf. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was there was a lot going on in the world of golf this week. Let's start at the now known as the American Express out at PGA West. It was a crazy week. This is, of course, marks the second week of me putting money down on the players to get in on the action that you talk about. So close with Patrick Cantlay. So close.
You're getting a taste of the life now. Now you kind of understand. You're like, oh, okay. Now I see this buzz that Alex has on Sunday afternoon. I get it now.
Yeah, you know, I now understand why some people end up losing all of their money and falling into financial disarray over gambling.
Yes, and you're doing it responsibly with me. Everyone play responsibly out there, but have a good time when you are wagering. And you came close, yours and my prediction of Patrick Cantlay, a guy that's had a lot of success at this course. He made a crazy Sunday charge. He was making putts from absolutely everywhere. Mm-hmm. San Diego, Bakersfield, San Francisco, everywhere in Orange County to Palm Desert there, where they were playing at PGA West. A valiant effort. I think it was a 61 in the final round. We sat around, we waited, we watched him hit balls for a while, but in the end, Siwoo Kim was one too good and ended up getting his fourth tour win.
Yeah, I think it was more that I feel like Cantlay was just working too far from behind. I mean, a 61 is a great number to put up on a Sunday to post 22 under in the clubhouse. But Siwoo Kim just kept plugging along, kept doing his thing.
He did. Yeah. Another pick I had was Abraham Answer, who also finished in the top 10. So solid week for him. I'm still keeping him on my radar. Check out our Twitter picks. I'm at Course of Life 1 and you're at MWRINC. I'm feeling a winner soon. We are knocking on the door right now early in 2021. So could be coming any week now.
We'll talk about Torrey Pines in a little bit. Everyone's favorite course out there. But let's talk about everything else that went on in the world of golf, because there was a lot.
Yeah, what direction do you want to go here? Everyone was in action. There's all sorts of little tidbits I want to get to here.
You know, let's start with the 60 out on the LPGA Tour.
Oh, yes. So LPGA down in Florida there, Lake Buena Vista Diamond Resorts Championship. And Jessica Korda went absolute lights out low on Saturday, firing a 60. And it was an impressive weekend. I think she went 65 or 66 on Sunday too. And there were some good fireworks in that. That was a kind of an AT&T Pro-Am style celebrities and golfers playing together. Fun little upbeat atmosphere there. But when it got serious, Korda was balling out and she ended up getting the win in the playoff too.
Yeah, you know, and of course you had Korda going super low, like you said, on Saturday with that 60. I think that is the fifth 60 recorded on the LPGA Tour is what I heard.
Correct. And only Annika's got that 59 back in the day. Yeah. She's the only one.
Yeah. And then that playoff with Danielle Kang, where she also went super low, shot a 566 to get into the playoff. So it was a crazy Sunday of the LPGA Tour.
Yeah, good stuff from that playoff. I love seeing two American stars going at it like that too, mm-hmm. who have really big personalities in the game. Follow both of them on social, and they're both a real treat to watch them travel and play the tour. So it was cool to see them go head to head. And also got a shout out another past guest of ours, Cheyenne Knight, who finished tied for fifth. She's starting to rack up some really nice finishes on the LPGA Tour. Nice to just pop in every month or two and know you're due for a good week. So we're seeing the consistency from a former Course of Life guest.
Let's talk about another former Course of Life guest, one Willie Mack.
Yeah, how about this? When I sent this to you on Twitter, I was like, what? I almost did a double take when I first saw the tweet, because the first way I learned about this news from our buddy Willie Mack, who was on the show a few weeks ago, if you want to check the archives, what was a tweet from Tiger Woods. That was the first time I heard this news at all. So it really threw me off. But Willie Mack, the third mini tour pro who's been grinding out there, we profiled him a few months back, getting a special Tiger Woods Foundation exemption into the Genesis Open thanks to Tiger freaking Woods. How awesome is that? Getting the retweet and the invite from TW himself to play in a PGA Tour event. That's just amazing. Happy
New Year.
Yeah,
right?
Seriously. It hit the practice range, right? Like, I see him on the range and he's posting stories like every freaking day, no matter what state he's in practicing. I know he's doubling down right now because I know his work ethic. So he's definitely going to be hitting it hard the next couple weeks here and looking forward to previewing his action at the Genesis. I'm curious what kind of pairing he gets to. Hopefully he gets a good little pairing there. Thursday and Friday. Should be fun to watch.
Certainly be keeping an eye on that for sure. You know who probably won't be playing in the Genesis Open, though?
Oh, yes. I think I know who
you're talking about. Speaking of Tiger Woods, big announcement, back under the knife for, what is this, his like 20,000th back surgery or something like that?
It's five or six officially. I've lost count.
I mean... What does this mean for Tiger? I mean, we feel like he's back, then he can't put it together, and then he is back, and then he can't put it together again. So, is he back, or is his back going to make it impossible for him to ever come back?
Well played, nice wordplay there. You really stumbled into that gem, didn't you?
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah,
unplanned.
All off the cuff, you're on Course of Life. Yeah. So, Tiger surgery. You know, I don't have to get into the details of it. It sounded fairly minor in nature compared to the ones he's had before, but he immediately bowed out of the Farmers this week and out of the Genesis. He's still going to be there in a hosting capacity. It sounds like, according to murmurs from Florida and Rory seeing him a few days after, that he was able to start hitting balls pretty soon after the procedure. So that part's encouraging. But again, Mike, you know what we've seen from these amazing Tiger Woods years in the last like 4 or 5 years, if you think of maybe 2019, how that started? That started with a buildup in the spring months. You remember a fantastic week he had in front of me at the match play, and 2 weeks later, he won the Masters. He's not quite going to have that buildup the way he would like right now. We're wondering if we're even going to see him for those March buildup events in anticipation of Augusta. So I don't like that timeline right now.
Yeah, it's questionable at best. And, you know, every year Tiger's going to take longer to recover because guess what? He's getting older. He's a much older guy than he was before. It's going to take him a while to get all the way back there. I know he's probably in better shape than I will ever be able to get myself into.
Yeah,
but still, you know, your body takes longer to recover the older you get. So
45, and we're on a handful of these, you know, pretty lengthy back surgeries right now. Obviously we're wishing the best and we want him to be around for that run up. You know, I'm going to miss not having him potentially on the Florida swing, you know, and at the match play in March and these events that build him up to that Augusta run that we've seen so many times throughout his career. So hopefully it's sooner rather than later.
And what this means also is that as fans return to the golf course, they won't be cheering on Tiger. So what do we think about fans coming back to the golf course? We're going to see them in Scottsdale, maybe in Bay Hill, TPC Sawgrass. What are we thinking?
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. You know, I appreciate, and I know you do too, I appreciate how the PGA Tour has rolled this out very slowly. They're being very precautious with this timeline. However, you know, things are, you know, there might be more light at the end of the tunnel right now in terms of the status of the world we live in, but things are still not great in terms of the way the virus is spreading. So there is still that inherent danger with getting large crowds together. Fortunately, golf is an outdoor playing surface and they can keep people outside and fairly spaced, but only in so many places. So we're going to get that test starting in Scottsdale to see what that looks like. I already know that the stands on the 16th look very different than we're used to seeing them look. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a very refined approach in the way I think golf fans might seat themselves a little bit more often, but that's for us to find out in the next few weeks here.
That's what's going to be interesting. Unlike in football, where you have assigned seats and you can separate everyone really easily, in golf, you move around the course. So
right. And it's very easy to just, you know, be walking and want to get a slightly better view and just, you know, maybe poke around someone, and people would get pretty close on tee boxes and greens, especially when it's everything in between the tee and the green. You can absolutely space yourself out all you want, but there are some tight spots on the course when you go to tournaments. So that's why they're going to start with these small numbers. We're looking at 5,000 to 7,000 a day, potentially. At Scottsdale, that'll be the first test. And then, Mike, listen, we all know how we feel about Florida. You knew they were going to roll the dice when Florida came back around in 2021. So it only figures that they're gonna start widespread galleries there, maybe in about a month or so. So we're going to get some tests here in the next 30 to 45 days and see exactly what type of policies are going to be put in place to make sure this is as safe as possible for hopefully the final stretch run of this crazy pandemic.
Well, how much is the PGA going to learn with their new partnership with the Euro Tour?
Oh, yeah. Seriously. Yeah. And Abu Dhabi had a few fans as well, too, this past week. It's interesting. There were not like a lot in like the fairways. Like they had kind of grandstands set up and there were like very small groups of like seating. So like you could kind of separate people off into like groups of six or eight people and whatnot. So that was definitely going on. But I'm interested really to see what this infrastructure is going to look like in the next couple of weeks. So follow us on Twitter and social because we're going to want to be posting to see what this looks like. I'm just kind of very fascinated from the fan perspective how this is all going to roll out on the tour's behalf.
The other thing we're really interested to see how it rolls out is something I know, Alex, you're going to love, which is this new second screen show coming to the world of golf, all about gambling.
Yes. And again, we're going crazy on the former guest shout outs right now, but shout out to George Chavarikas of the Golf Channel who popped on and did a Masters preview with us back in the day, past guest and friend of the show. He's going to be one of the hosts. And so essentially him and Steve Burkowski and a couple others are going to come on and basically have what they're calling a second screen experience. It's kind of like going to be a running talk show where there is commentary, but they're going to be putting up live lines. They're going to be previewing head to head matchups each day on the course. And they're going to start this at the Waste Management in a couple weeks. So we're going to see exactly what it looks like. But the bottom line is here is this just shows you that, you know, you've seen it around sports, but especially in the PGA Tour, they're going to move a focus towards wagering and in-play wagering. And that like fantastically romantic idea we've talked about years from now, where you and I are standing on the tee with our phones and we can bet whether Tiger hits the fairway or goes in the rough and you know, bet a dollar through our phones, like immediately, instantly. Like there's some amazing things on the horizon in that type of realm, which could really change the viewing experience for a lot of people.
I'm just going to vote on Barkies all day, every
yes,
day.
That's right. 100-1 on a Barkie for Bryson DeChambeau on the 10th hole. That would be amazing, right?
Oh, yeah.
good high value odds there. Maybe bet on like a Sandy for Rory or something like that. Yeah. You know, up and down odds. How about hole-in-one odds, Mike? You know, that's a fun lottery bet right there.
I mean, hole-in-one odds on a par 4, which right now DJ's the closest. So
that's right. He almost did it in Hawaii. So fun things on the horizon there. I'm looking forward to seeing George Chavarikas host that show. It's going to be debuting on digital platforms and Association Golf Channel and NBC Sports here in about a week and a half. So excited to see what that looks like soon.
Let's move over to what's going to be happening this week. Of course, they head to the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. Just one of the most infamous courses in golf.
Yeah.
For any number of reasons.
Iconic. They've had this tournament there for, geez, decades now. And then a lot of people know, well, you know, Tiger on one leg, 2008 US Open. That's my ultimate Torrey Pines moment whenever I think of this course. It's had some amazing Farmers Insurance Opens. But yeah, a great spot right on the water, the oceanside vibes. And I got to shout out the paragliders, Mike, that you can see off in the distance. that are doing like a paragliding ride over the water and over the cliffs by the course. That's definitely one of the best views of the week for everyone who's watching.
It is indeed. Let's talk about the field. It's loaded as usual right now. John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Patrick Reed, Jason Day. I mean, who's not? Again, it's like a who's who in all these fields right now, which is always great. Nice. So let's give out a couple names. Who are you thinking of putting on your list?
Nobody on that list. One guy that I always, I hit this button every 60 days and he's back. My boy, Victor Hovland, flying a little under the radar. I'm definitely going to put a dollar on him for sure. My picks will be at Course of Life One on Twitter and you'll follow along Wednesday afternoon at MWRINC with your selections. And then the other one I got to throw down is a guy who's got great history at this course. I'm going defending champion route. I don't usually do this a ton. I know you're a fan of this, but Mark Leishman absolutely loves Torrey Pines. He's got a great history here. Won in reverse conditions and played well here in good conditions. So I'm putting Leish on my card for sure on my Farmers Insurance Open picks this week.
Okay, we will keep an eye out for those picks on Twitter. They'll be coming Wednesday. I will, of course, give you my very scientifically chosen picks as well.
Right. You're going to do the research, crunch the numbers, and get back to me, right?
So much.
Love it. Look forward to getting you in the winner's circle soon.
It's. I'm looking forward. We're close. It's going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Let's turn over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into at so the world of sports. What you got there, Alex? What you watching?
Movie review. King of Staten Island. Heard of it? Yeah. Seen it at all?
That's the one with what's his face from SNL, right?
Exactly, Pete Davidson. It's semi kind of plays like a little bit of a biography of his life. There's a lot of parallels if you know anything about his personal life and kind of what he's been through. He's had some struggles as well with mental health. It documents that. It feels a little bit about like kind of his life story. I enjoyed the way the movie was written. It played out nicely. I enjoy characters in the movie. However, there was just like no end in sight and there was like no goal of the movie. So I had a really hard time like getting to the end and like getting excited for the buildup to see what happened at the end. And I don't know. I'm going to give it 3 out of 5 stars. I had higher expectations and so did my wife, but it's worth seeing if you enjoy little guy, big city life, because there's the dreamscaping kind of attitude throughout the movie, but 3 out of 5 stars from me.
Okay. I also watched a movie this week. Finally got to it before it disappears from HBO Max. That is Wonder Woman 1984.
Yes, very talked about. So what's the recap on your what's your thoughts?
This 2.5 hour movie was so long.
Uh-oh. Yeah, it's tough for me too. I'm lazy.
It had a lot of good pieces. I mean, Chris Pine, Pedro Pascal were both fantastic, as you would expect. Gal Gadot was great as well. Kristen Wiig was an interesting choice to play another villain in there. There was a lot going on. The themes were getting hit over your head with a steel bat. But ultimately, I think it was a bit of a mess. I give it 2 stars out of 5.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, we're nothing if we're not honest. So we're honest.
And I will say to anyone who thinks I'm a hater on this, I loved the first Wonder Woman. Okay. I thought it was fantastic.
Fair disclaimer. So you're just calling it like you see it, and that's what we were tuned into outside of sports this week. And I think it's a time for pop politics, right? Yeah, you got a lot going on, right?
Let's see what happened this week in terms of pop politics is really kind of getting into us. Well, there was something that happened on Wednesday, but other than that, it's been an awfully peaceful week in my mind.
Freaking really squeaky clean. However, there are a couple of things. There are a couple of dogs that are on the loose in the White House. Major and Champ are just causing an absolute ruckus right now on the White House lawn.
The groundskeepers really having an issue with that.
So Biden administration, we need to get them under control. This is an absolute outrage. Joe, you're disrespecting the office of the presidency, and I can't believe you're just letting them roam free like this. Unbelievable.
I'm also really confused with the daily press briefings. I don't understand what's going on there.
We got a long way to go. They're ironing things out right now. They're reworking the playbook. Okay. They're scrapping everything that they found and walked into. So they're starting anew here. Shout out to Major and Champ. The two very golf friendly dog names for the two first pets here on Pennsylvania Avenue. So all quiet on the pop politics front. I like it.
Let's get into this week's guest, Alex. It's Nick Compass. He's a PGA pro voted as one of the Golf Digest best young instructors in the game. We've been getting a lot of these, Alex. You just know how to pick these good golf instructors.
Thank you. Yeah.
How has it been improving your game? I think you had a pretty good round this last week, didn't you?
I did, yeah. So he invented a really cool putting aid, which he's going to talk about, has some great tips for parents too. And I actually took a little bit of what he said in our conversation and applied it to my round this past Saturday. I'm following with my eye line, Mike, from the ball to the hole and the hole back to the ball. I'm really locking in on the line of these putts. I'm working on my alignment. I broke 80 on a tough golf course for the first time in a while. So it's good to finally be back in the 70s. I haven't said that in a long time. So if you can glean anything from this conversation, maybe it's a putting tip or two as well to help your game.
Great. Great. We'll get into it in just a moment. But first, as always, I want to let you know that this conversation is brought to you by our friends at Groovit Golf, makers of the Groovit Golf Brush. New Year's resolutions this year are to keep your club face clean in 2021.
Right.
The Groovit Brush makes it easy. It's got a built-in pump that sprays water or cleaning solution right onto the club face. It's got detachable magnets, so you can pop it off the bag, bring the brush to the club, and it's got a 3-year bristle guarantee. If you can wear out the brush head cleaning your clubs in 3 years, send it back. Groovit will give you a free replacement. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control that clean grooves will give you. Using your existing clubs with the Groovit, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So head on over to grooveitbrush.com and get your Groovit brush today. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com for your Groovit brush.
Next up on the tee from Santa Ana, California, we've got a PGA pro who's one of Golf Digest's best young teachers in the game. Also created some really cool products for golf instruction as well, including a really neat putting aid we're going to get into. It's Nick Compass joining the Course of Life. Nick, how's it going this evening?
It's doing great. Thanks for having me. Excited to chat with you.
Definitely. Yeah. So we always like to start at the top. I'm curious because I do know you've got the Southpaw brand with your teaching and you are a lefty. I'm curious, A, what were your first memories of golfing as a kid? And B, were you always a lefty with the golf clubs or did you start off swinging righty?
No, I was always a lefty. So played baseball growing up. You know, I kind of grew up right before the Tiger area where golf was real cool. So I played a lot of other sports, baseball, soccer,
yes,
basketball, football. And so, was always lefty baseball, threw lefty, did everything lefty. So actually had one of my good buddies who kind of started me in the game. He had played a lot. His dad was left-handed. So I was already lefty in baseball. His dad had an old set. And I said, well, I guess I'll just use this since I'm already lefty and, you know, didn't really think of switching to righty because of clubs being easier or anything of that, because his dad had this lefty set that I got to borrow. So that was my first set at a clubs and kind of went from there and then just stayed lefty, of course.
Love it. Lefty for life. That's very cool. So I'm curious, in terms of your golf career growing up, you know, for you to get going and have the success teaching that you're having at a young age, at what point did you realize that maybe you wanted to teach the game? You know, a lot of teenage kids, or if you're in high school, college or whatnot, you know, as a young adult, you're thinking about, you know, yourself being a professional and fulfilling that dream that you see on TV. Talk to me about what got you into teaching originally, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the opposite of a lot of other golfers in the fact that, like, I didn't grow up playing junior tournaments. I wasn't a country club kid and hanging out at the golf course. I'm from Southern California. I spent my summers at the beach doing junior lifeguards and playing a bunch of other sports. Had two good buddies that played high school golf that I was friends with just from growing up. So just from playing different sports with them, was like, they're like, hey, come play golf. Okay, I'll come try it. And played with them, got okay to be able to kind of play with them and play some decent courses. Got to college, played football through high school. Really enjoyed the learning process of trying to become a better football player. And the coaching aspect of it and learning and kind of knowing that I wasn't the biggest guy out there. I wasn't the fastest guy. I had to kind of figure out my way to be the best I could. And part of that was, you know, the learning process. So really enjoy that aspect of it. So got to college. My roommate, my freshman year, was on the golf team. I was playing football. I got a little burnt out from football.
Oh, okay.
He's like, why don't you come try out for the golf team? It's a Division III school. It's a good program. We won our conference in football. It was a good golf team too, but it wasn't a Oklahoma State team kind of thing. So played that, and that kind of started me going down the road of learning about the golf swing. And then from being lefty, actually, when I got out of college, I was at a driving range and a junior college coach came up to me because I had my college bag, and he started talking to me because he was a lefty. And I kind of asked him about if he knew some of the instructors at this one course. And he's like, actually, there's a lefty guy, this guy by the name of Seth Glasgow, who was my first kind of mentor. He's a lefty. And he was working for the Nicholas Flick schools at that time. So he was my, from being lefty again, kind of got me kind of in that door and to meet with my mentor, Seth Glasgow.
Very cool. So talk about that adjustment being a lefty. You know, there's lots of lefty golfers out there, but you're definitely in the minority in terms of teaching the golf swing. We so commonly see the golf swing first and foremost being taught to righties. So kind of what kind of adjustments, like mentally, do you make when you're looking at maybe your swing and how you approach the game as a lefty versus teaching righties, and just kind of how do you associate that all?
Yeah, so I think one of the positives of it is being able to just mirror somebody and me feeling comfortable with it. So if I've got a righty golfer, I'm just standing there doing my swing normal or kind of moving normal, and I'm mirroring them. The speech part of it, of you know, if we're talking to a right-handed golfer, we might say our right hand. I've kind of gotten fairly good at making sure I can adjust that as far as if I've got a righty or lefty. But like, I just had a lesson with a lefty, and kind of standing across from him sometimes feels almost a little awkward versus a righty, just kind of being able to stand across. So that's probably the biggest thing is the benefit, I think, of being able to just kind of mirror them and show them. Sometimes if I need to swing or do something righty, I've done it in enough moving around that I can kind of fake it, so to speak, or kind of move it if I need to show them that. But a lot of the times I'll mirror them, and I think they get a good view because they get to stay in their current spot, their kind of normal standing golf position, and I'm being able to mirror them, and they're just kind of standing there looking at me and observing and then trying to copy that versus them, if I was standing in front of them as a righty, kind of, you know, how they've got to turn and kind of look that way. So I think it's a nice benefit.
Yeah, I like that. No, thanks for explaining that mirror concept. That makes a lot of sense now that you break it down. Yeah. So you've kind of had, I feel like you've had a little bit more experience than the average teacher has because of the lefty thing too. So that's very neat. Now let's talk about the legendary instructors that you've worked beside as well too. You mentioned him briefly. Just explain to people the impact that Jim Flick has had on golf instruction. He's often tied at the hip a lot with the work he's done with Jack Nicklaus, who's obviously a name people know, but tell everyone about your time with Jim Flick and the honor you had of being kind of picked by him to work alongside him.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the coolest things ever. So my mentor, Seth Glasgow, who I knew from here from Southern California, I was working with him a little bit on my game and deciding how much I wanted to get into teaching and what to do. And they were doing a 3-day golf school in Las Vegas, and he called me. It was like a Thursday night. He goes, we got a school Friday, Saturday, Sunday. He goes, we don't have anybody to be the range attendant and to kind of, you know, help out setting up all the stuff. He's like, can you come out and do it? And I'm like, yeah, I'm there. So got in the car, drove to Vegas, whatever time, got there 5 a.m. set up. And that was kind of my first time being able to meet Mr. Flick and be with him just watching him teach and, you know, the process what he cared about the students and trying to help them so much and making sure he given them his time was just unbelievable. So I had about two and a half years where I was kind of his video guy. So I was his right hand guy for all these 3-day golf schools.
Nice.
A bunch of corporate outings. You know, got to hang out with him after, obviously taking him to dinner and enjoying, you know, lots of stories between him talking about old Golf Digest schools days with Bob Toski and Davis Love and Jack Lumpkin and all these guys.
Yeah, I grew up on those names. I'm a big, remember those 90s Golf Digest days. Yeah.
Yeah. So those things. So it's one of those things you kind of look back now and you pinch yourself of like, you know, how cool it was to like be able to hang out with him. And I remember one time we were doing a school at Pebble Beach, and we're walking by the first tee to go eat or finish up or something. And there must have been like four or five people stop them and kind of like looking and going, oh gosh, you know, my gosh, Jim Flick. And you're just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm with him kind of thing. And so he definitely had that celebrity status of doing it, but he was so down to earth. You could talk to him about anything. You know, it's one of those things where you think about guys like that. And there was times I called him to ask him something. He'd always pick up the phone. He'd always call me back. It's just took care of you, really, really treated you really well, and just was just such a great guy, and just really, you know, a couple of great years hanging out with him.
That's awesome that he had that impact. And then one other teacher that we have to get to that you spent some more time with, as well as you've kind of molded your teaching. I know that you got to spend some time at that the kind of famous, often spoken about Haney Ranch in Texas with Hank Haney, an instructor that we've talked about a lot on the podcast. We read through his book, The Big Mist, and talked about a lot of his time in that book and time with Tiger. What was your experience like out at the ranch with Hank Haney?
Yeah, so that was again kind of a pre-Tiger thing. So he kind of took over with some of the golf schools. We had kind of transitioned into the ESPN golf schools, and he was kind of our lead instructor, our big name. And he had worked with Mark O'Meara, hadn't worked with Tiger yet, and so I kind of got to meet him before. And so
interesting.
He was great, and so he was, you know, he used to put on, and I don't know if he does it still, he used to put at the beginning of the year, he used to do a Teach the Teacher seminar, 2.5 days, and so I got to go to that. He invited me, again, another top instructor that treated me unbelievably well, and saying like, oh, Nick, you need to come out and come to this seminar. We do a bunch of teaching stuff, and you're going to love it, and sure, sounds great. Like, why wouldn't I want to come out? And so some great opportunities to learn, and so was able to go out there, spend some time with him, watch him teach, you know, did some 3-day schools, corporate schools with him. You know, guy had just a ton of knowledge and was worked so hard during the lesson. I remember one thing he had said when he talked about giving a golf lesson, and said, you know, one of the reasons he felt that he got people better was like how many practice swings, and he'd move them around and get them to feel what they're doing. And I tell a lot of other instructors that I talk to, you know, the two biggest names I spent were with Jim Flick and Hank Haney, and both of them had no problem hopping in there and moving their hand for their grip, or feeling at the top where they were trying to go, or helping them kind of move them around, you know. And we would always joke around, you know, about the instructor that kind of stands back, kind of leaning on the club, and that was definitely not either of them.
Right.
They'd hop right in there and move them around and do that. So trying to always kind of be that way with my teaching to kind of help the student in that way.
I love that brotherhood and sisterhood, for that matter, within the golf instruction community. We definitely hear a lot of that in the pros that we have on here. And it's neat to hear that even the best in their industry are still hands-on and not just kind of sitting back and watching from afar. So that's really cool to hear. In terms of Haney working specifically, did you get to see him work with any of the pros specifically, like O'Meara, or what was that time like with him?
No, he was, like I said, he was right about to, he was close to working with Tiger, and I think he had started to work with them a little bit
on the down low. Yeah.
on the down low. And so, I know the one thing, and I think he's probably said this in the book. I know the one thing he had kind of told me about is when he had gone out there, and he's like, he goes, man, I don't remember if he was telling me this or he's telling us as a group, but you know, he's like, man, Tiger's workout or like routine is crazy. He's like, we're at the house, and he's like, he's up at 6 a.m. and he's already run 4 miles, and we're at the course, and he's like, we're hitting balls, and he's like, we're doing short game. Then we go play 9 holes. Then we have lunch. Then we come back, and we're doing some putting, some short game, and we're going to play another 9. And he goes, you know, it's 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. We're back at the house, and I'm thinking we're done. He's like, I'm sitting on the couch, and I see Tiger walk past, and I'm like, Tiger, where are you going? And he's like, well, I got to do my shoulder workout still. And he's just going with that. And I know one other one that was kind of interesting is I remember Hank telling me, and this was before TrackMan. So you didn't really have, you weren't getting these exact numbers. Nobody was really using launch monitors like they were now.
And right.
He's telling me about Tiger hitting driver, and he's wanting to know, like, he's hitting this 300 yard drive, and it moves a foot to the right. And he's like, Hank, why'd that move to the right? And he's like, well, it's 300 yards. The percentage of what that is by moving a foot is so tiny, like that. Like a bird flew by. Like, there's not really anything that I can tell you there that's going to like fix that. That's not really a fixable thing. So,
Jesus.
Got a few stories, like a few things like that. But I don't think I was ever there when he worked with Mark O'Meara. He had other pros. I know some of the Keenies had been there to do a couple lessons. I remember watching a few with them, and I remember the ball strike on that was pretty unreal. Whether he was working with one of us pros, 15 handicap guy, it was the same attention to all of them. And it wasn't I'm mailing it in because this guy's a 10 handicap. It's I'm hopping in there and I'm moving him around and okay, do it again, move him around, do it again, you know, kind of thing. And so it was always cool to see that work ethic by both of them and how strong it was and how they just worked so hard through the lesson and kind of, you know, gave it their all.
Love that. You have a really cool myriad of experience with those different legendary teachers, and you've taken it to your teaching now, director of instruction at Santa Ana Country Club in California. Beautiful spot there. Let's talk about a couple things that you do now as well, too. I know that you've done a lot of tooling and retooling with the Junior Golf app, the iJunior Golf app, but let's just talk about, you know, coaching and how you treat instruction with kids these days. There's been a lot of growth in the game of golf, especially in this last year with everything that's gone on in the world. Golf's been a nice outdoor respite activity for lots of people. And there's lots of parents that are listening out here that are getting their kids into the game too. How do you like to approach instruction when it comes to younger kids that are first getting in the game instead of a grown adult?
So I'd probably say I have two main philosophies. And one is, it's kind of off of the TPI Junior philosophy of I'm trying to create athletes. And I've seen kids that have come through that haven't played any golf, but they've played baseball and basketball and football for, you know, flag football or whatever. And they come in and they don't even, they've never played golf before and their swings look amazing. Like I had a girl a couple weeks ago. She played softball through high school. She had never played any golf and her swing was basically like you can match it up against a tour player. And it was, she couldn't hit it perfect every time because she didn't have a good spatial awareness yet because of the club. But the way that the club moved, I mean, it was just like perfectly on plane going back. Jeez. Come a little bit inside.
Just in all the right slots.
Just in all the right slots. And again, that's all from that. So that probably the biggest thing is wow. I do a lot of stuff with, in my junior program about trying to create athletes. So like when I do my summer junior stuff, I've got a tee out there and kids are hitting baseballs into the net. We're doing some balance stuff. We're doing some throwing. We're doing, just a mix of activities to try to get them to be more athletic and to get those. There's a few basic movements that you need from throwing and hitting and striking and those things that transition into golf. And if they have them, how much better it is. And I, for myself, even my daughter's 12 and she's playing a little bit more right now. And we, the other day, like I could just see, cause she hasn't been active as much cause of COVID and stuff and not being out as much that like her body wasn't moving that as well. And I was like, you know what? I got to get her like hitting baseball. And so I got a tee the other day, she's hitting baseballs in the garage for 10 or 15 minutes. And we went and played 2 days later and her swing was like night and day. And so I was just like, when you're doing that baseball, your hips are working a little bit better and your body's just working a little better. And she just gets a little freer because you're standing up tall. And it's just for her, it helped her body move a little bit better. Now, would that be for everybody? No, but again, it's going to be helpful. And for her, it helped her body move a little bit better. Cool. I think the second thing is I always want my kids to have fun. My biggest thing is to not have anyone get burnt out or I didn't enjoy it. I don't want to come back because my thing is always, you know, you hear stories about, hey, this person started golf, they weren't that great, and then they played a little more and then they got better. So as long as I can keep them in the game, there's a chance they can get better and improve to whatever level they want, whether it's playing with their family, whether it's playing high school golf, college, pro, whatever it is. But if they get burnt out and they don't want to play anymore, I don't have any chance to it. And I hear parents all the time that'll say like, oh, well, my kid's 12 and they haven't played much golf. It's too late for them. How do you know? How do you know that? You don't know that. So don't do that to them. Just keep giving them a chance. So again, for all of my kids from the ages of 4 to 18, I just want to keep them out there, keep giving them opportunities. And again, to me, that part is making sure that they have fun when they're there. And if they have fun, they're going to want to come back. And if they come back, they're going to get a little more practice. And that's how they're going to get better and decide if they, what level they want to put into it and love it to whatever level they want to go. And again, my biggest thing at my club is I'm trying to make sure all the kids that I have coming through from age of 4 or 5, whenever they start, that when they're 10, 9, 10, 11 kind of age, that they can go out on the course on their own, go play 9 holes. They're not going to shoot. They may not shoot even par, but they can go play 9 holes, kind of hold their own, have good etiquette, and get out there and enjoy themselves and play. And for that to what they want later for the game, that depends on them. But it could just be, like I said, playing with their family, playing high school golf. Who knows? Maybe be a pro. But if they're not playing, there's no chance they can get better.
Love that. Yeah. And it's kind of philosophy number two goes with philosophy number one. If these kids are having fun out there, it may not necessarily mean that they're beating golf balls for 9 hours a day. You switch it up and introduce a couple other athletic activities to mix it up, kind of keep their athletic range of motion. So they go hand in hand. Love that suggestion there for the parents out there. Let's take a couple minutes to talk putting before we get to our quick shot questions here, because you are also the founder of a really cool tool that I think a lot of people could benefit from. Definitely myself. Tell everyone a little bit about the Smart Line tool. I'm sure as a teacher, you'd seen a lot of different putting tools before. So what was the genesis of creating this tool specifically?
So in at the end of 2016, our golf course had done a renovation. So our golf course originally was tree lines, small greens. Every par four was basically about 390 to 400 in a very great golf course, great greens, but like very, didn't have a lot of variety. We did a redesign. New golf course had bigger greens, more undulation. It's almost a link style course where we've got some bent grass surrounds that are really short that you can putt off of. But the big part was we had these new greens that were like our hole number 3 and hole 8. They're almost 50 yards long. So you've got these giant greens out there now. And so what happened was, as when we reopened the course, I had a ton of members coming to me and saying, Nick, I can't putt on these greens. I'm 3-putting. I can't read the greens. I don't know what to do. And so again, part of that was the undulation. So I had my way. I've always been a pretty good putter. I had my way of kind of reading the greens and putting, but I was like, I need to kind of dive in a little bit more to give them a little better strategy. And so kind of went down this wormhole of kind of like, what are all the different green reading ways out there? And so, you go back all the way to, there was a thing called vector putting, which was a mathematician guy that engineer that put together this system. And then you have aim point and you have all these different systems. And so I kind of picked and choose what I kind of liked of, okay, I like this. This is pretty simple. Okay, this is too technical. Okay, this is, a person's not going to do this. And kind of came down with, hey, every green has the thing I had tested was, or one thing when I was doing my research was, if you had somebody get lined up to a putt and you said, hey, what do you see here? Everybody's thought or process or unit was different. Meaning somebody might say, oh, it's a foot out. It's a ball out. So nobody was going by the same set. So again, it'd be like, hey, how tall do you see this? Oh, I see that as 5 feet.
Yes.
I see that as 34 inches.
It's like the metric system with the entire world. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got everything mixed up there. So my first thing was, hey, I've got to get a consistent measurement. And so, hey, the only thing that's consistent on a green as far as a measurement is their slope on it. So I looked at it as, okay, everybody knows what degrees are. So let me kind of find out what degrees of a green are. Most greens are anywhere between 0 to 3. Obviously 0 would be a straight putt. 3 is going to have a pretty big breaking putt. You can have some 4s in there, but that doesn't happen that often. And so then I said, okay, here's your break. Now I got to get them helping them be consistent lining up. And so that's where the ball marker came in that you've got this ball marker that, hey, after you read the green here, it's going to kind of help get you lined up. And again, no green. And I remember I talked to a top teacher who teaches a lot of tour players and LPGA tour players. And one of the things I'd said to him is, so if you were on a 10-foot putt and you measured it and and you said it was a 1 degree, it's not a 1 degree slope that entire way. You could go. So if you were 10 feet away and you take the first 3 feet and you put a level down and measure it, it might be 1.2 degrees.
Right.
And then you take that level and you go another 3 feet, it might be 0.9 degrees. And so there's no way that it can be an exact science because the green is not perfectly a 1 degree or a 2 degree or whatever it is. So it's you're just trying to find that base, so to speak. So and when I told him this, he was like, really? It's not? And so I was like, yeah, it's not. So what you're doing is trying to guesstimate. So again, if you can guesstimate that, hey, this is about a 1 degree. Okay, I get it lined up with the ball marker of how it's supposed to be set. And now I'm consistently aiming in the same spot for about what a 1 degree is. And I've got some people that I've used it with at my club that, again, I try to make it pretty simple. But I even did it with somewhere. It was, hey, it's instead of doing number, they're like, I don't know if I want to do the numbers. I said, okay, you can do it this way. If you think it's got a little bit of break, okay, you line it up here. If it's a medium amount of break, you line it up here. And if it's a really big break, you think you use the outside line on the marker.
Nice.
And you get lined up.
That's refreshing to hear. I like that.
Yeah. So again, but now they're consistently lining it up. And I even had one guy said, hey, you can either have a putt that just breaks a little bit or just breaks a lot. And there's your options. Okay. So making it even easier on them to get lined up, but now they can at least get, they're having a process, consistent process with how they're trying to read the green. And then they're having a consistent setup with how they're trying to aim. So they're not trying to, oh, I'm going to put it a ball out this time, or I'm going to use feet this time, and I'm going to aim a foot out. And so again, having that different spot every time is a little different. So this way you're working backwards, you're picking the line on the marker, and that's kind of sending you in the direction.
Love that. And so that's great for alignment as well too, which is absolutely what I need. Yes. On the greens. Well, where can people find and take another look at that smart line tool if they're looking to get it for themselves?
So you can go to the website, smartlineputting.com. You can see us on YouTube and on Instagram. So all of those are Smart Line Putting. On the website, you can there's some videos on kind of the four-step process on how you read the green, how you kind of analyze it, how you get lined up and then putt. And also on the website, you can buy the marker. And I've got a couple other, after I made the marker and kind of noticed like, hey, I'm you know, working on the line and making sure people get it going down the line, we added a couple other products, putting string. I actually added one, a putting stencil, which is a aluminum plate, but it's got some lines cut out in it. And you can basically take a chalk pen and you make some marks on there. So you can use kind of these lines or this setup on the actual green. So, you know, one of the downsides of some of the training aids, the putting ones, is the ball is either sitting on top of something or your putter is sitting on top of something. And so that affects the roll a little bit. And so that would be a better way, because now you're getting that true roll of on the green. So again, all of those related to reading the green and getting that start line. And if you can do that, you're going to make more putts.
Love that. And again, it's Nick Compass Golf on Instagram as well too, if you want to check out everything else he's doing. Let's get to our quick shots before we wrap up here. Just your real quick answer thoughts to a few random golf and sports related questions. We'll start off first on the lefty front. I'm going to put you a little on the spot here. Tell me maybe a PGA Tour pro, or maybe it's not, maybe it's just someone you instruct. Who's your favorite lefty action or your lefty swing? Maybe not named Phil Mickelson, who's a lefty that you kind of admire and like to watch.
That's a tough one. I mean, I've been a Phil fan for forever.
We all have.
So it's really hard to think of many other lefties in that. I'm almost drawing a blank, but trying to think of some other lefties. You got to like Mike Weir. Guy won the Masters. Good player, great short game, and he keeps grinding. I know he's always working super hard on his game, so he's a great lefty.
Love that. And then let's talk about where you're located. Santa Ana. It recently came up in the news too as well. I know the Santa Ana winds are something that's kind of very mythical, and it's something a lot of people in lots of parts of the world don't understand. They just know the term. What's the real deal with kind of the Santa Ana winds and how that all works in your area from a golf and a life perspective as well?
Yeah, so you get like kind of an offshore wind that just it'll pop up and it'll just be a super windy day, and it's usually the opposite going. So usually like where I'm at, I'm really close to the Orange County Airport, and so the airplanes typically will take off towards the ocean because that's the way the wind's kind of going, but then when we get the Santa Anas, you got the wind going the other way, so the planes kind of get going the opposite to kind of slow them down. So the wind's going kind of out away, and I'll tell you, man, there's been some days where you get those Santa Anas and they're just going all day, and the course I'm at, we've got these really big eucalyptus trees, and eucalyptus trees do not have very strong roots, they are deep roots, And so, man, we get those Santa Ana winds going some days, and those trees can get taken out sometimes.
Oh, man. Jeez. Okay. This is the real deal.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And then you mentioned that you played football up in college as well, too. Where are your roots geographically, and who are your current, like, college and NFL teams that you root for?
So I grew up here in Orange County. I live in Huntington Beach. I grew up in Fountain Valley, which is a city right nearby. So that's where I call home and grew up. When I was growing up, and my wife is a UCLA alum, so we're UCLA football fans. Used to be more of a Charger football fan and probably a little bit more of a Ram fan now.
Yeah, definitely. Makes sense. I love that answer. And then let's finish with our 19th hole question. We love asking all our guests on here. When you get in from a long day, whether it's teaching or if you get out to play for yourself and you get to the 19th hole at Santa Ana Country Club, what is your go-to order in terms of like your favorite meal and drink to have after a round?
That'd probably just be a Diet Coke with a club sandwich and fries. No tomato.
No tomato, just like my wife. That's tried and true. I love it. Good answer. Again, it's Nick Compass on the Course of Life. Thanks so much for the tips. Appreciate what you're doing for the game and looking forward to seeing more content as well.
Thank you so much.
That interview with Nick Compass is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, the makers of the Phone Caddy. It is a one-of-a-kind phone holder for golfers designed to mount right onto the golf cart. The Phone Caddy works seamlessly with almost any phone model and it velcros onto the cart in seconds, keeping your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips. You can change music, answer calls and texts, and even post a couple Instagram stories and more, all with the Phone Caddy. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. And for our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE for 10% off your Desert Fox Phone Caddy, including their patriotic line, typically excluded from any deal. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com. Use promo code COURSEOFLIFE to get 10% off. Again, that's 10% off with promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com. Head on over there and get your Phone Caddy today. And we're back. Great interview there with Nick. Putting alignment, Alex, putting alignment. You know how important it is to actually putt the ball on a line.
Yes.
So it goes in the hole.
Yeah. Here's a funny thing about golf is you can hit an amazing putt, but if you don't start it on the right line, it's never going to go in. And we're big golf gadget guys. We love a good golf widget. And I love what Nick created with the Smart Line putting tools. Again, check out the website. Just simple little things that you can carry in your bag when you're practicing. Keep yourself lined up. That putting stroke, it's crucial, Mike. It's crucial. You know, you can't hit a great putt unless you're lined up correctly. So I shout out to Nick and his tips and looking forward to seeing more golf content and instruction from him as well.
So much. If you like that interview with Nick Compass, go ahead and leave us a rating and subscribe on the podcast app of your choice. Let us know how we're doing. If you don't like it, then... maybe you are either too good of a golfer and these tips are just no good for you,
right,
or you're not a golfer, in which case that's okay. We'll probably have another chef on soon and you can give us a 5-star rating then.
Yeah. In the next 10 or 15 minutes, they're going to prove to you exactly why you don't have to be a big golfer to listen to this. Cause we're going to go crazy about Tom Brady, who did it again. It's unbelievable.
Let's get into it. Alex, how are you doing mentally, emotionally? How does it feel to know that Tom Brady, who led the Patriots to so many Super Bowls,
six
Super Bowl victories, is now on the cusp of winning a seventh with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
The shitbag Tampa Bay Buccaneers. One of the most overlooked franchises possibly in the history of sports, who at times can just never possibly be any more relevant than any other team in the NFL. Mm. They have just swept the bottom of the mud pile of the NFL for decades now. And to see Tom Brady just go there, just like at the drop of a hat in the midst of a pandemic with no training camp or preseason, and roll off a season like this and go to another, a 10th
Super yeah. Bowl Ten. With a team like this. It's jaw-dropping. And as a Patriots fan, it's one of those things where, you know, I am sad. I'm sad that we made this mistake. I feel horrible we made this mistake. I know Bill Belichick's completely sleepless. But I like I said for weeks now, if he gets here to the Super Bowl, I will root for him. I want the legacy to grow. So I am happy for what Brady has done. And I'm here for number seven now.
Let's talk about what makes Brady the GOAT of GOATs. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So Tom Brady, over the course of his career, has a better chance of making the Super Bowl in any given season than Steph Curry has of making a three-pointer.
And mind you, Steph Curry shoots a dozen three-pointers a night for 80 games a year.
Yeah. Steph Curry is about 52% or so. Brady's at like 53%. So
just unbelievable stat. There's a million of these. The one that I saw was he has 33 playoff wins all time. The next closest quarterback is Joe Montana at 16. The next closest. He's got over double the amount of playoff wins of any other quarterback in the history of the game.
Brady has more playoff wins than any other QB if we just look at his career after he turned 35.
That is just gaudy, just saying that, right? After 35, that is when 98% of the NFL is already retired at the age of 35. And he has put together an entirely separate Hall of Fame career that is unparalleled just after the age of 35. It's 10th Super Bowl appearance now, going for ring seven. It's truly unbelievable what he's doing. And, you know, there is absolutely no shade that you can throw in his direction at this point. The argument that's gone around Boston Sports Talk Radio for the last year is, all right, we're going to get the answer. Who was it? Was it Brady or Belichick? Who was behind this? You know,
I think it was Brady.
Is it 55-45? Is it? All I know is, Mike, it started off 50-50 at the beginning of this year. And I'm going to put it close to about 70-30 to Tom Brady after what I've seen this season. This is some unbelievable stuff from a 43-year-old.
I mean, I think it was both. I think Belichick certainly had a lot to do here with the development of Brady. At a certain point, the student passes the teacher. So maybe we can say that.
Look what the teacher did without Tom Brady.
That's true,
too. 7-9 playoffs for the first time in two decades.
There's one other comparison that we were talking about before we started recording that I was thinking about today that I think is worth mentioning. And when we talk about a Tom Brady, we try to compare goats with goats from other sports.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know if I really would consider Brady in a conversation with Tiger Woods right now. I in terms of, is Tiger Woods good enough to be with Brady? I don't know anymore.
Tricky from golf to foot. It's tricky when you're an individual.
But I feel like the best comparison with Brady is a Mariano Rivera.
And that's that's you as a Yankees homer. However, I do level strictly from the word closing when it matters the most.
Closing and in terms of like success in the postseason, where Mariano Rivera put up gaudy numbers in the postseason. I mean, he played in essence a full regular season and then some in the postseason over his career.
Yeah.
And the numbers he put up is just amazing in that time. And Brady has done similar. He's played 10 games. He's almost played he's going to be in his 10th Super Bowl. That's almost as many games in a season.
So those Brady stats are nuts. You can look up a million on the internet, but you're so right about that. And the postseason performance, you know, some of his greatest years, Mike, where he won the rings, you know, they would limp in at 10-6 and 11-5 and they wouldn't look in their best form. And he would literally flip the switch and get it done in the postseason and just turn that knob to another level. And that's what makes him the GOAT. It's so undisputed at this point. But what I do love is that we're going to get an unbelievably fantastic storybook finish Super Bowl matchup here. Brady has gone through Brees. He's forced Drew Brees to retire. He's gone through Aaron Rodgers. He's forced Aaron Rodgers to consider leaving Green Bay. And now he goes up against the defending champion and Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. You know, I'll ask, you know, since I'm watching this week in and week out, diehard fan, you're a bit more of a casual NFL fan. What are your thoughts on this matchup, particularly between Brady and Mahomes as it stands in the Super Bowl?
I saw a great image today, a great meme today, and it was old Yoda, who was Tom Brady, and baby Yoda, which is Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. That is eerily accurate. They both have that Yoda-like quality already, and it's really just the age that separates them. They both define their greatness already. It's just a question of when and how much.
This is a question of, is Mahomes going to put together in the first part of his career numbers and results that make us all think he's the next Brady? Because, of course, we want everyone to be the next something,
right,
in sports.
Yes.
Or is Brady going to beat down Mahomes and say, I'm the GOAT, now go sit down?
Yeah, not yet. Can you imagine? I mean, I played those storylines out with some friends. You think back a couple of years, Brady kept Mahomes out of the Super Bowl with that amazing win in Kansas City. Mm. If it wasn't for that, Mahomes would be in three Super Bowls in a row, which is insane to think about. Mm-hmm. There is a lot on the line with this matchup. If Brady could potentially get him in that stage in Kansas City and then get him in a Super Bowl on his home field, we forgot to mention. For the first time, the Bucs are hosting, and they're literally going to wear their home colors too. They're the home team via NFC-AFC flipping every year. So the home team is wearing home colors and playing in their home stadium for the Super Bowl. Unbelievable.
With fans.
Yeah, so 7,500 vaccinated healthcare workers, Mike, and then another 15,000 are they giving away tickets. Cheapest pair, Mike, to get in on the sites right now, $21,000 for a pair.
21 for 21-21.
That's right.
2021. Don't listen to me. I will say, I'm going to say this right now. We're going to talk more about the game next week, but here's my early thoughts for you.
Yeah.
It's going to be a complete shootout.
Yeah. I'll get into it next week more, and we'll talk prop bets next week as well, which is always a fun conversation here. Mm. We'll get into all the nitty gritty with the national anthem time as well too. But I already bet the Bucks, and I already bet the over, Mike. We're gonna have touchdowns left and right. So I'm looking forward to the shootout in a couple weeks.
We will talk more about it next week. It's gonna be fun on Super Bowl Sunday. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
I'm bringing back the jersey and the TB12 hat, Mike, one more time. Okay. I haven't touched it in a year. It's coming back.
Just make sure you wipe off the dust.
Yes. It's been a while.
Quick update to our alma mater, because we like to shout them out here on this podcast. Quinnipiac men's hockey ranked number 11 in the nation.
Love being on a poll. Love being in the top 20. And love it when John Buchugras is tweeting about us. That means you're doing
Quinnipiac
in college hockey.
Yes.
So let's to our Bobcats.
Yeah. Let's hashtag always in with food.
That's right. Brought to you by our friends at Rastelli's Meats, RASTELLIS.com. Our promo code is GOLF10 for 10% off all your purchases. They do high quality, responsibly sourced meats, and they ship them directly to your door. The January diet is coming to its end. It's the final week for myself. I'm going to make it throughout the entire month of January without bread. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I am holding on. Mike, where are you at with your diet?
Well, this week on Wednesday, we kind of said, fuck it, let's celebrate. We got pizza and cupcakes.
Oh, you just went for it on inauguration.
We just went for it. We said, you know what? It's a day. We're not shy about it on this podcast.
We're letting loose.
It's been a tumultuous 4 years for those of us that are not Trump fans. And especially the last couple months have been even more so, especially if you live in Georgia, like got two elections out of it.
So, are you saying you earned your pizza and cupcakes there?
Oh, I think I did. And and so with that, I didn't lose any weight. I didn't gain any weight either this week, but I'm good. But that said, too, I'm booked for 9 months. I paid for 9 months of Weight Watchers, so I'm stuck here.
I like that. No, that's good. You're ahead of the game. Shout out to that.
Yeah.
In honor of it being pardon season as well, too, I do have an announcement as it pertains to Sober January. It's dry. It's gone very well. However, I am going to give myself a gift, just like you gave yourself one last week food-wise. It has been quite a year, quite a month to start the year. We've been through a lot. So I am going to give myself a small pardon in honor of Super Bowl 55. I'm going to pardon myself and all of the Course of Life listeners out there who are doing a dry January right now. You have been pardoned from the final 55 hours of dry January. So that means this Friday at 5:00 local time, congratulations. We've been through a lot together. Dry January is officially over.
That's nice. I'm going to have to check the legal department, Alex, whether you can pardon yourself. But as for everyone else, they're good to go.
So shout out to our listeners. You worked hard for it. You earned it. Okay? So we'll see you out there this weekend. You have a good time safely and responsibly. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you all next week on The Course of Life.